Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome to Futures Focus. This is a podcast brought to you by Prospects 1500. Alex Sanchez here, David Gasper, per usual. 2022, David, here we are. And along with the new year is new top 50 lists. And joining us today as well is Kurt Moody, the Detroit Tigers correspondent for Prospects 1500. We got quite a show. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. I'm all gassed up with some pepperoni pizza and some beer, and I'm feeling good.
We are doing this on a Friday. It's one of the first ones I think we've ever done on a Friday. I'm excited. Got the weekend ahead of us. And Kurt, how are you doing over there?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. I don't know if I can top David's pizza and beer, but I've got some Italian sausage and red wine. So,
That's nice.
It's a crazy Friday night here.
It's a little fancier than mine, but it works.
Sounds like the adult version and then the kid version.
Hey, I'm an adult, sort of.
Kurt, I have a question for you before we move on to baseball stuff, okay? And I'm just going to make a statement right now, and I want to know your honest thoughts about it. Don't hold back, all right?
Never been known to. Go ahead.
Of course, Kurt, very, very familiar with the beer world, so I'm just going to – that's where this is headed. Sour beers are wonderful.
That's a correct statement, correct, extra correct, with three exclamation points at the end. Sour beers are God's gift to beer.
Excellent. I'm glad.
As a Wisconsinite, I am wondering what in the hell you guys are thinking over there. What? Oh my God.
Here's my take, because I don't want to go off on a rant here, but sour beer is, so IPA, in the craft world, IPA is still your number one style. It's been the number one style for 10 years. Over the past 2 or 3 years, sour beer has actually been the fastest growing segment of craft beer. The one beer that will always be in my refrigerator is a sour beer, and that's New Belgium Lips of Face Series La Folie. It's a Flanders Red Belgian sour. It is heaven in a glass.
Oh my goodness, you guys. Okay. This is just, okay, I'm not an IPA guy at all, okay, as I'm sure you could imagine based on my comments, but oh my God, you guys are just, this is killing me here.
Well, not everything can be New Glarus Spotted Cow Cream Ale, sir.
Well, no, of course not, because that is heaven in a glass, sir.
I love it.
Anything great New Glarus makes over there.
All I want to say to this, and I tell this to all of my friends that give me that David Gasper response, is that, I mean, they have to like IPAs for this to make sense, but if you like an IPA, I always ask them, when did you have your first IPA and what did you think about it when you had your first taste of an IPA? And it's always,
I nearly threw up when I had my always first a IPA. Negative. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually at some point they come back and then they love IPAs and it's their favorite. Sour beers, exactly the same thing. First time I tried it, I was a David Gasper. What in the world have they done to beer? And then it grows on you, and boom, there you go.
I completely agree.
This is all right. Shameful.
I know. I'm glad you disagree. That made it more interesting, David.
I'm so glad I joined this podcast this week. This is great, yeah.
Yeah.
We can not talk about the AL Central. We can just talk about Wisconsin beer. I'd love to.
We do. I mean, there's some podcast potential there, beer and beer, baseball, you know, and
baseball and beer.
I've already got the market cornered on that one.
All right, let's get serious here, boys. We do have the AL Central to go over. All five teams in the AL Central have their top 50 lists up on the site, prospects1500.com. Please check them out. A lot of time and energy goes into these lists because anybody can make a top 10 list. Hell, you can make a top 20 list in a day. But a top 30, top 40, top 50 list is a lot of effort and a lot of research goes into these. I know I can speak for myself because I've just completed my list today. And both you gentlemen have completed your top 50 list. And I'm going to just stop here for a second as well, because, you know, we have a couple hundred listeners. We're doing all right for a podcast about minor league baseball players, let's be honest. And one of you listeners out there, I don't know which one, I don't know who it is, but I know there's at least one person that I'm going to blow their mind right now. Okay, prospects 1500. There are 30 teams. We each do 50 prospects per team. 50 times 30 is 1500, 1500. That's where we get our name. One of you listeners are like, oh, wow, I got
Tim, it. Tim, I knew it was you. Tim, I know you. I know you've got your mind blown right now.
God, that's true.
One of the things I've always joked with Scott, our president, about is, don't make me too angry. I'll go make prospects1530.com. We can have that 8-minute abs, 7-minute abs competition where I just go one prospect more.
Yeah, it is a wonderful thing. You will not find a more comprehensive list anywhere I've looked. I have in my researching, right? I mean, you get 30 if you're lucky from a few publications out there. We're giving you 50. We changed up our format a little bit this year, and then I want to give you guys an opportunity to go over your process. But if you've noticed in the past, usually you've had a write-up for every player, 1 through 50. But we noticed that, you know, a lot of those 30 to 50 range players weren't being read, and so we've changed up the format a little bit this year, and I think it's a little bit cleaner, despite the fact that maybe you're not getting as much information about each individual player. The fact that you can now look through it and see, okay, this is the list, and you can get a snapshot of it. As you'll notice when you open up a list, is we have the first three tiers just as normal. You'll have a write-up on each person, and then when you get to the tier 4 and tier 5, you'll see purely a list, just, you know, 26 through 38 or whatever it was, and this the player with the position and the level that they were at. And then at the bottom of that list, you'll have a little write-up on a few of the ones to highlight. So what did you guys think of that change? I thought it was a very clean transition to something that could be more useful for people, but I wanted to know what you guys thought of that. Well, I got two people here. Kurt, what do you think?
I loved it, Alex. I think that it focuses the attention span of our readers. I mean, let's be honest, in today's world, we'll be lucky if you scroll down on your mouse wheel three times to read something. So in order to make sure that you see how deep our correspondents go, you know, 50, as you mentioned, 50 players means we're pulling some names that your average fans and even some Dynasty League players just have never heard of. So in order to get that kind of in front of the reader faster, I love the condensed list.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly makes it a lot easier and a lot quicker to finish up writing, rather than having a 50 player write-ups to do, only having maybe about, you know, 20, 25 or so. And then just kind of, you know, wrapping up a bit easier with the tier 4 and tier 5 guys. I liked it, you know, going through, and it really helped tighten things up.
Yeah, and to David's point, you know, those tier 5 guys, how we do our rankings, those are guys that really have an outside chance of making the team's 40-man. So it's kind of hard to do even one sentence without sounding negative on some of their, you know, outlooks, both in real-life baseball and in dynasty baseball.
Yeah, exactly. And I had a couple of guys. They're like 23, 24-year-olds in rookie ball, you know, older for that level. And I would have said, like, almost the same thing for each one of them. And now I just kind of all group them together and say, so-and-so is, you know, in the ACL, they're a little older, but keep an eye on them. And so, like, it was just easier for us too, and we can focus on the names that people want, which are usually the top ones, right? And that's who we're going to go over a lot today as well. But I mean, we got to find those gems, and there's just no way you can find the gems without going deep into these systems, and you can't know all the systems. So I love the way that we each do it. And you know, we might be wrong, but we're going to go. We all have our guys in our system that were like, hey, this guy is legit. And so we will talk to you, Kurt, about your Tigers. But before we do, what I wanted to go over just one minute or so each, maybe, about your process on ranking. What exactly do you hold high, and maybe something that you kind of fade a little bit? For instance, For me, a catcher is always just going to be slightly lower than perhaps you would see him on a traditionalist, because for dynasty purposes, I'm just not in love with investing in catchers. But that's very unique to me. I can't speak for all other rankers on what they do. So I wanted to hear a little bit. David, what was your process and what do you hold highly in terms of value when it comes to your prospects for your Brewers?
I mean, for me, it's kind of a mix, you know, of, you know, like real life, you know, value. What are these guys' roles going to be? What's their ceiling? You know, I don't know exactly how to describe my process. I mean, a lot of it, I think, can just kind of be described just by like gut feel, just looking at them, looking at the tools that they have, the stats that they've put up, just kind of a combination of all of them, and just kind of believing who could end up being the best big leaguers from this group, and trying to rank them accordingly.
And then Kurt, what are you, is there anything that you think that maybe makes your list a little bit unique as opposed to our other writers?
So one thing I firmly believe in, and I'm if you follow me on Twitter at all at @debt_guru_Kurt, you'll learn that I am a firm believer of the hashtag there is no such thing as a prospect pitcher. So it's tough for me to put pitchers in the top five, let alone a handful of them in the top 10, just because, I mean, let's be honest, chicks dig the long ball, and offense still is more fun to look at in prospects than pitching in my eyes. So I'm usually a little bit more offense heavy in my list than pitchers, but along with, you know, my beer nerd, I'm a data nerd. So I take all of the minor league clubs' season ending team stats and kind of assign rankings for leaders in average and home runs and RBIs, and then try to use kind of a analytical view of, if you're first in this category, second in this, first in this, you should be first overall.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that a lot. And as long as we're all clear, you know, about what our processes are, and I think that's a good time to read our paragraphs intro. Most of the writers have given a paragraph about what they're doing, and hopefully you get an idea of what's important to us, because it's just going to be a slightly different, and as long as you know what's going into the process, I think that really helps. So all right, boom, we got that out of the way here. So we have the process, and now we can look at some of the results for these AL Central teams. So let's take a break right here so we can have a little bit of some advertising. and then we'll be back and talk about your Tigers and the rest of the AL Central. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back. The magnificent trio here of Kurt Moody, David Gasper, and myself, Alex Sanchez, joining you here on Futures Focus, brought to you by Prospects 1500. We are ready to start going over some of these lists. So why don't we save the Tigers for last? So make sure that everybody listens. We'll start with some of these other teams just to go over, an overview of perhaps the top guys and maybe one or two guys that are a little lesser known that we might like. So White Sox, India. Oh my gosh, I did it. I knew I was going to do it.
Yep, $5 Sox, in the jar.
Guardians, yep. Tigers, and Royals and Twins are the teams we'll be going over today. Dealer's Choice, Kurt, you're our guest. Which team did you want to start with?
Well, let's get my least favorite out of the way, and let's throw those Cleveland Guardians into the mix at number one. That way the bad taste in my mouth of Cleveland, Ohio will be gone by the time I talk about Detroit.
Yeah, we'll start off with the Guardians, and right away we have something to talk about, because for me, tier one are some elite prospects, and we have three chosen here by Kevin Sleds. They are George Valera at number one, Tyler Freeman at number two, our boy, friend of the podcast, and three, Daniel Espino at number rounding out the tier one. And tier one, by the way, players with high expectations of both making the majors and playing at an all-star level for a number of years. Let's start there. Should it be zero? Should it be one? Should it be two? Should it be three? What do you think about this Guardian system, David?
I mean, I think it's a fairly solid system. I mean, they've been cutting down on their big league roster in recent years to focus on that farm. And, you know, I mean, Valera is someone that they could really kind of use sooner rather than later. I mean, Cleveland has really been short on good hitting outfielders for a number of years. Valera, I think, is going to be a huge boost for them. You know, Freeman, friend of the podcast, he's been a really, really good player. And Espino, I mean, Cleveland has had a lot of success with pitching development. And I know you guys may not be as big fan of pitching prospects, Kurt, as you explained earlier. But Cleveland just has a way of churning out really, really good pitchers. And Espino looks like he's going to be another one of the next group.
So what is the answer then? Should they all three be in tier one, in your opinion?
Yeah, sure.
Nice. Yeah. What about you, Kurt? What do you think?
I'm going to politely disagree like sour beer with David.
Oh, my God.
I really like Valera and Freeman in the tier one. I do. I think.
But not the pitcher. Shocking.
But shocking. Here's your shocker. Espino is an amazing talent. 20 years old. Great pitch arsenal. It's still, to me, 20 is tough for me to get a real judge on how he's going to handle AAA or Major League batters. But Valera, I mean, there is no doubt in my mind Valera is going to be an outfielder in that progressive field or Jacobs field. I can't even remember what they call it now. He's going to just murder baseballs into that left field, spray them everywhere. And then Freeman's just average and hitting to all fields with like gap power speed. I mean, he is what an infielder. He's Lindor's heir apparent in Cleveland, and I think he's going to fill those shoes confidently.
I am going to, like with the sour beer, agree with Kurt there. I do think that Valera and Freeman could have great cases to be in tier one. Espino, it's not even the pitching prospect are dangerous idea for me. I don't know if he's, I mean, I ranked him pretty low in our top 100 aggregate. So I just haven't seen enough, I guess, is a good answer, like Kurt was saying, to see him. I don't even know if I would put him three. I mean, I kind of like Rocio better, Noel better. If I was drafting, I think I would pick both of those ahead. So, and to me, those aren't tier one. So that's kind of where I land. But you got to respect the love for Espino there, because I have seen Espino really high for a lot of people. I mean, there's no doubt about it. People are some people are really, really all in on him. So I get it. Yeah. I get it.
And when you're Kevin and you're a Cleveland specific guy, yeah, you're going to be a little bit higher on him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think a lot of our correspondents like to put the pitcher that they're highest on up there, because even if you were to build this with three shortstops in ahead of Espino, it feels low to have that, what you consider to be a future ace. Yeah. So, I mean, it's respectable that he's that high.
Yeah. I mean, 20 with that stuff's pretty special, but yeah, like you said, the chances of something getting in the way as a pitcher with that stuff, just, it seems like everybody goes through that. Let's move on then to tier two with, again, a lot of positional players. I mean, David, you said that, and I agree with you, that the Guardians are very, very good at developing pitchers, but the top seven only have one pitcher, which I think tells you how good these guys are. because there is a lot of and they're all in the dirt too. Like, I guess Nolan Jones is probably going to the outfield at some point, because let's be honest, I mean, the Guardians don't have outfielders anywhere in the major league roster. So like, somebody's gonna have to play out there, but I guess these infielders can. So who are your favorites there of the infielders in tier two, which is Brian Rocio, Gabriel Arias, Nolan Jones, and Jonkeski Noel? David, we started with you, Dave. Let's go to Kurt first here.
Out of their tier two, I think Noel is the highest prospect that I fear in the AL Central coming up in the Guardian system. You know, 20 years old. I know he's only at high A, but I think this year will be a chance for him to get into double A and possibly even triple A, depending on his performance in double A. I believe Noel is actually probably, in my opinion, better than, you know, Rocio and Arias at 4 and 5.
Yeah, I don't know about Rocio, but I can give you Arias as well. David, prospect fatigue equals Nolan Jones. True or false?
I think that's becoming true. Yeah, I mean, he's up to what, 23 now. Was he drafted out of high school?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was 5 years ago now. I mean, so that, yeah, prospect fatigue definitely starting to set in. I mean, this is someone that, you know, I think everyone kind of would have expected he would have graduated from prospect status by now. And he reached AAA last year, wasn't quite able to make his major league debut. But I mean, he had that slow start, but yeah, prospect fatigue setting in a little bit. But if he can get off to a hot start this year, I think he can reverse that and just put himself in a good spot to earn a starting role with Cleveland. And then, you know, all the hype will just be determined from there.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what you're saying. Don't sleep on him. I think a lot of people are. By the way, the one pitcher that did make that tier that I did not, mention, Gavin Williams, right-handed pitcher coming in at number 8. After number 8.
I love that pick.
Yeah. Good player. But let's move on to tier 3, just so we could try to hit all the systems. Tier 3 includes Bo Naylor, a guy I really like here at number 10, Angel Martinez. He's just another shortstop. I mean, one of these guys are going to be a superstar. I just don't know exactly which one, I guess. The other, Logan Allen at number 11. Anybody here catch your guys' eye, David, that you think you should highlight?
Tanner Burns at 17 as well.
Oh, you took him from me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy, I mean, just drafted fairly recently too. And you know, like I've been saying with these pitching prospects in Cleveland, they just have a way of churning them out. And you know, I know he's down at 17 in Kevin's rankings here, and I mean, maybe he subscribes a little bit more to Kurt, your philosophy on pitching prospects and how they should be ranked. But yeah, I think Burns is someone that is going to be a big piece of that Cleveland rotation in the future as well.
And since clearly he has he took your guy there, I did want to highlight Peyton Battenfield, who, if you've listened to this podcast in the past, when we've had Pars List out here, is absolutely in love with this guy, clocking in at 18. As I'm looking over these names, look at these ages, guys. Have you noticed this? Like, they're all 23, 24, 25. And I know we're supposed to be, we don't care about the age, right? We've had that discussion.
Age is but a number.
But man, little older prospects here, at least in my system. I was dealing with 17 and 18 year olds a lot with the Padres. So
that's because you traded everybody.
Yeah. So these are all potentially guys that can make impacts. I mean, we're talking about AAA and AA talent here for the Guardians, with a lot of openings at the major league roster. This is going to be exciting if you want your prospects to help you right away. So those dynasty teams that you guys have that, you know, you're competing, targeting these guys makes a whole lot of sense, because I just imagine them just kind of, all right, who's ready? You're ready. Come on up. Boom. You suck, you're back down. We got somebody else. Oh, we got something over here. Lotto ticket exploded. And one of these guys, two of these guys, three of these guys could be just great finds and 2022. As we move on here, anybody else you want to mention that catches your eye?
For me, it's Isaiah Green.
Oh, yes.
Really for two reasons. One, 20 years old. When I watch him play, I think of an old Cleveland outfielder. I honestly think he's Kenny Lofton in an outfield. You know, he's going to hit for average. He's going to get on base through walks. And when he's on base, he's going to be dangerous on base. 20 years old, came over from the Mets in that Lindor trade. I think that this full year of minor league system ball, we're going to see what type of player Isaiah Green is going to end up being.
This system's really good. I mean, we haven't even talked about Carson Tucker, who was a hot commodity there for a minute. We haven't talked about Will Benson, who is prospect fatigue down at 42. There are a lot of good names. This is an underrated list, especially for, like I said, these guys are up quickly. I mean, really interesting stuff. All right, David, dealer's choice. Who are we moving on to next for our overview?
Well, I think it's time that we take a little trot down to Kansas City and look at some of the big prospects down there, most specifically Bobby Witt Jr.
Oh, God, I love him so much.
So
he's
good.
The sour beers of prospects.
He is your new Hudson Head, right?
No, he is far. I'm not the only one that likes Bobby Witt, I don't think. I think we all do. I mean, is there anything to say about Bobby Witt
Jr.? He is Bobby Witt Jr., and he is most likely going to be making his debut very early, if not opening day, in 2022. Whenever that comes, if MLB can get things figured out with the lockout, but that is a whole completely different issue.
I don't know how he cannot be the opening day shortstop for the Royals.
Service time manipulation.
Yeah, well, and that was going to be my very next sentence, is the only reason why he should not be the starting shortstop on opening day is to control him for another year, which that's a whole other podcast, because he is major league ready. He is a generational talent. He's a franchise transitional talent. It's going to be impressive to watch.
Yeah. And we don't really even know what manipulation time is now moving forward. It might not be a thing. So
it might change with the CBA, and then they can put him out there opening day.
All right. Steamer has his projections, 500 at bats, 24 home runs, 18 stolen bases, and 267 without a major league plate appearance to date. What do you guys think?
I think he'll do better than like what Jared Kelnick did when he had his major league debut. You know, Kelnick was, Kelnick struggled. I don't think Bobby Witt's going to struggle when he hits major league pitching. I see his swing. I see his approach. I see his attitude. He is patient. He's not just trying to launch a ball into the freaking fountains every time. It's going to be different for him.
Yeah, I mean, those are pretty ridiculous projections for a guy that's going to be a rookie and has no plate appearances. It's pretty insane, because they're conservative to begin with. That's not too conservative. That's a really good season for a 21-year-old. My goodness. All right. Again, you listen to this podcast, Bobby Witt Jr., good. And tomorrow the sun will rise. I mean, obvious stuff. Let's move on to tier two. David.
Yes.
Boy, Asa Lacy. You loved him a while back, and I'm interested to know, have you gone down? Or has the stock going stayed the same? What do you think about that lefty?
You know, I once had that. This was a couple years ago. I'm going to tell you the story of this other starting pitcher that I had very firm belief in, and right away he performed terribly, and he made me look like an idiot for believing in him. But then 2 years later, he comes back and he wins the National League Cy Young.
I'm going to guess it's a Brewer.
It's Corbin Burnes. Asa Lacy. I said, you know, okay, yeah, this dude's going to be good. I really like him. Comes out last year, does horrible. So I think he's still going to turn around. I think he's still got time. I mean, he's 22. He's just got to, find that command again. He had it before. He had it in college. He's got the stuff. It's just kind of a matter of getting that back. So I think Lacy's going to end up being fine. There's still time. There's still a lot of talent there. It's just, I think, going to be a matter of getting his head right and just kind of shaking everything off and moving on to a new season and making the adjustments that he needs to.
The walks, man.
I know.
They're crazy. He had a really good fall performance as well in the Arizona Fall League until you get to the walks again. I'm
okay, but there was also like a billion walks in the Arizona Fall League. I don't know if you looked at the stats, but like it was insane, like how much they were walking like everywhere across
the
Arizona
Fall League. I'm going to tell you this: he had a lower walk rate than his 2021 season at Quad Cities, and it clocks in at 7 walks per 9. It was bad, and that's 52 innings. I mean, that's just really bad. But you know what? It reminds me a lot of Mackenzie Gore, where you could quit him. You could just say, "Oh, isolation one, he's awful." But the stuff and the arm, being from the left side, you give these guys some chances. And I wrote about this in my top 50 about Gore. I think it applies to Lacy as well. Is that these prospects, these especially pitching prospects, they're not linear. They are going to develop at different rates and different ways. And like your boy Corbin Burns, a great example, is sometimes we expect them to be so great and then they're not, and then we just write them off. And that would have been a huge mistake to do with Corbin Burns.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember that. So, but at 3.
Pitching
three,
progression, it's not linear. Player growth, development, it's not linear.
Yeah, Lacy might be a great example of that because he is getting faded a lot of places. I mean, I don't know if I'd have him as high as 3. I like Nick Prado a lot. And maybe, Kurt, you could talk about Prado or Melendez, whoever you feel like. But those are two guys that seem to be a lot safer than Lacy in this system right now.
I agree. And I like Nick Prado better than I like Melendez or Lacy. Mm. And just to give one sentence on Lacy, he looks like a strikeout pitcher who's trying to nibble on the edges too much and not just trusting that he can miss bats with tremendous arm slot and spin. But that's just my one sentence on Lacy because he's a good Texas Aggie. I love Nick Prado. Nick Prado and Bobby Witt tag teamed AAA this past year, and them at the top of the lineup in Kansas City. Nick Prado, the one thing is still worrisome, and Kevin called it out in his article, was the strikeout rate from Prado's got to get better. He's either going to hit ahead or behind of a Bobby Witt or a Whit Merrifield. He can't be striking out because those guys ahead of him or behind him are going to hit. So for me, Prado is the biggest upside in this tier two. The strikeout's the only thing that worry me.
Yeah. What I love about Prado are the stolen bases. As silly as it sounds, I mean, he's stolen bases at every level for a first baseman that are just really, really valuable. If you can get 10 to 15 stolen bases from your first baseman is insane. And I don't think people factor that in as nearly as much as they should, because he will give you that. And he's awesome. He's going to be, and he gets on base. So there's a lot to like fantasy wise with Nick Prado. After Prado was Kyle Isbell, who did make his debut. It was he got off to a really nice start and then sort of faded a little bit. Anybody else here that we should talk about in tier two before we move on?
Not
David, what did you think about their draft? I did want to ask you that. Actually,
Frank Mazzucato.
Yeah. The first round pick, what was it, the 7th pick?
7th overall pick, yeah.
Nobody had that in their projections, right? I mean, this was
no. He was projected more like a sandwich round, second round type dude. I mean, he was moving up. He threw 4 no-hitters in a row, all right? So, like, that's something. He's got something there. 7 was early. It was definitely playing with slot money with what they did there. But, I mean, he's a talented, tall, lefty pitcher that's got some really good stuff. I mean, we'll just kind of see if they're able to develop him. I mean, we know we kind of they struggled initially with Asa Lacy last year, so hopefully Mazzucato can get off to a bit of a better start. But as a high school arm, there's a lot more risk, obviously. But we'll see what happens. But I mean, he's a talented pitcher, and he's gonna be one to at least keep an eye on when he makes his debut this year.
And, my thought on Mazzucato is, was it a reactionary pick to how bad Lacy's season was? And yeah. I say that with, one, did they see, oh, man, this left-handed pitcher we took isn't performing. We need to fill that, you know, slot in our system. And then, two, the fact that his curveball is his go-to, I just fear high school left-handed pitcher curveball. Is this kid destined for Tommy John before he hits the pros?
Is he Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, that's the name that came to mind, David. Absolutely.
So for every five, there's the Clayton Kershaw. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
50.
But it's also not a death curse anymore. You know, it's just a 1 year off and come back, build up your strength again.
Really good observation there. And I'll end it with this. Is that sometimes we get to be too smart when it comes to these prospects and in our dynasty leagues. He was a reach and he's a slot deal, but that doesn't mean you have to fade him. He still could be quite good. Again, if he's a guy that gets drafted in the third round and has a huge debut, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, look at this unknown guy that I have. And just because he's a first rounder and he probably doesn't deserve that overall pick talent wise, doesn't mean that he's bad. And I think a lot of people are going to make that mistake with him. Don't pick him seventh overall in your first year player draft, but there's going to be people that just, I'm not drafting him. I just move on. So don't make that mistake. The Royal system too, quite deep here as we get into tier three, a couple of guys I like, and then you can take off in the direction you guys like. But Nick Lofton, I've always liked, and Michael Massey as well. Two guys that are really similar in terms of the value that I hold for them in dynasty leagues up the middle. Jackson Kowar, I love. I think at 25, with one of the best changeups in the minor leagues and now in the major leagues, that you need to just ignore 2021, a rookie season. All that linear talk we did earlier about Lacy, I think, applies really well to Kowar. With a little, you know, he wasn't walking guys, and he's got the changeup, and that changeup is really, really good. And then Eric Pena, I have no idea. I was ready to put him into a top 50 at one point, and now I'm ready to drop him on teams. I mean, one dynasty league I did. I'm like, all right, see you later, Pena. So Alec Marsh is a big name, too, from the past as well. So pretty deep system really here, huh? What do you think, Kurt?
I like Darryl Collins. Our prospects 1500 list, he sits at 15, the last spot there in that tier three. 20-year-old outfielder who doesn't really strike out a lot. He gets on base. He puts the ball into play. It's that same mentality of some of these bats in the future of Kansas City baseball just need people ahead of them to get on base. And I think Darryl Collins could be one of those guys. You talked about Prado's speed. If you've got two or three guys who have a high on base percentage and you follow that up with, you know, Witt or Prado's or Melendez's power, that's dangerous. So I really like the idea of Collins, you know, becoming that kind of speedster, stolen bases, and high on base percentage.
After that, tier four, tier five, I recognize a lot of these names, which means that like there's a lot of stuff down here to like too. I think Daniel Vasquez, a 17-year-old shortstop, is super interesting at 22. I've always loved Brady McConnell for unknown reasons in my mind, but he had a lot of power there in Florida before he was drafted. He's down at 42. David, anybody else you wanted to mention before we move on?
I don't think so.
It's a good system. I think those two are. I mean, this whole Central has some really good systems until we get to the White Sox. But, like, they're really, really good. So let's do that now, actually. Why don't we go on? It's my turn to choose, right? So we'll go over the White Sox. Tier one, there's nobody. Easy. Nobody's even close to tier one, in my opinion. Jose Rodriguez. Now, I'll be honest with you. Maybe it's the state of the system. But I haven't done a lot of research on Jose Rodriguez. I recognize the name. I know he's a middle infielder. Do either of you have a good little scouting report on Jose Rodriguez? He is the number one overall prospect right now for the Chicago White Sox.
Nope.
The only thing I've ever paid attention to Jose Rodriguez is he's got just such quick hands and a good bat. What I struggle with is at number one, he doesn't have, you know, top tool trade power. He's not going to hit 40 and drive in 100. But then with his bat, I honestly don't see him hitting over 300. So what is he? Is he a 275 hitter with a high on base and low strikeout? I think it speaks, like you said, Alex, to the state of this overall system.
Yeah, he's interesting, though. I mean, a 20-year-old doing the things he did at high A and double A are pretty impressive. But, yeah, no standout tool that's going to carry a fantasy team. But, you know, he's on the middle infield. I always like those. maybe you can talk, David, about Colson Montgomery, the number one pick for the White Sox in 2021, coming in at number two on Daniel's list.
Yeah, Montgomery, their first-round pick in the draft this last year. I mean, really athletic guy, and I mean he's big for a shortstop at 6'4". So I mean he's got plenty of power that he can bring from that position. And if he's able to stay at shortstop going forward and have that kind of power and that kind of hitting ability, I mean Montgomery's probably the closest thing they could have to a potential tier one player. In the near future. Wow. He's not quite there yet. I mean, he just got drafted. But if he has a strong showing this year, then I mean he could perhaps vault himself up into that category.
Yeah, decent debut for him too. I wonder what his standout tool is going to be as well. He's very similar in that regard to Jose Rodriguez. Like, okay, he might be a really good shortstop in real life, but what is he going to actually do for your dynasty team? There's only one other player in tier two, and I'm not meaning to laugh, but that's what you get when you are World Series contenders, I suppose.
And you graduated everybody.
Yeah. I'm Norge, or is it Nor? It must be Norge.
Norge Carlos Vera.
Yeah. A right-hander. Daniel has been on this podcast before. I'm sure we'll bring him in and we can talk about his list a little bit more because we're getting into the guys that he's seen and talk to. I mean, he's really good with that stuff. But back in tier three already at our fourth overall prospect, Jake Berger, who made his MLB debut, Micker Aldolfo, who, again, he's been around seemingly forever, 25-year-old. But interesting write-up. Did you guys see Victor's write-up on Aldolfo? Really showing off that power that could be fantasy enticing moving forward. But yeah, Aldolfo has been around forever too. Brian Ramos. I feel bad moving on, but anything else to talk?
The only two that stand out to me is purely from a hobby standpoint.
Yeah.
And that's Yoelki Cespedes and Yolbert Sanchez of, you know, two 24-year-old international signings who at times look like they are just men playing amongst boys, and then it looks like they disappear for a whole month. So it's frustrating from a prospect lover of baseball. It's not disappointing as a Tiger fan, but I thought Yoelki or Yolbert both would be, you know, major league team contributors.
Yeah, interesting. Let's move on then. What do you say? Let's get those Twins done, and then we can talk about your Tigers. I do want to spend, we got to spend time on those Tigers. So the Twins are interesting as well. Definitely a disappointing 2021 for them. But, the prospects that did get called up in 2021, I'm still very excited for, and they're not prospects now. But, you know, Kirilloff and Larnach, I think, are just two underrated guys that you can get in Dynasty and regular redraft leagues for super cheap, and you should. In one league, I actually got a third round first year player draft for Trevor Larnach. That's what I got offered that, and I took it.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Twins are definitely worth talking about because similar to the Guardians, a lot of these guys are going to be ready to come up really, really quickly. So tier one, Kurt, Austin Martin. Tier, I think we could debate that. What do you think? Is he a tier one player?
Yes, question mark. If there was a tier 1B, the Minnesota Twins, or as some of us like to refer to them, the Blue Jays of the Central with their prospect list they have right now. I like Austin Martin. I loved him coming out of Vanderbilt. I don't know whether Austin Martin wants to be the player that Austin Martin can be. And I don't want to get through psychology. I'm no psych major. I hope that a change of scenery going from Toronto to Minnesota system reignites the fire for him to love the game. Because watching him in at Vanderbilt was just, you know, another world where he should be in tier one. The way he played in 2021, I don't know if he's tier one.
What do you think, David?
I mean, I think he's certainly got the talent to be. And you know, with that, and yeah, as Kurt mentioned, you know, perhaps a change of scenery will help. I don't know if it is all psychologically or if he was just having a down year over there in Toronto system and struggling, and that kind of took his joy away or whatever it was. But you know, perhaps with the change of scenery and being over there in Minnesota, that could help. But he certainly has he has all the talent, all the ingredients to be a tier one player.
Yeah, what's interesting is actually performed better for Toronto than he did in Minnesota system. So really, when you look at the stats, like, you know, it reminds me a lot of Jordan Groshans. Like, everybody is fading Groshans now, but he really didn't do anything bad. He just didn't hit like 30 home runs. And Austin mm-hmm. Martin really didn't do anything bad. He had a great on-base percentage. I mean, over 400 on-base percentage, chipped in 14 steals, and just had those five home runs. And that's what our eyes are trained to do, is to think, okay, we should be seeing power in the minors if these guys are going to be successful major leaguers. And we don't know what they're working on, right? Maybe, you know, I know Jordan Groshans is working on, he wasn't worried about the power. He, you know, I've heard reports that he's trying to work on some other things. So I'm wondering if Austin Martin has something like that. Like, hey, work on getting on base, work on your walk rate. Don't worry about the power. We're not asking you to hit 30 home runs right now. So like you said, the tools are there, although he didn't hit a bunch of home runs in college either. So maybe we were wrong to expect a 25, 30 home run guy here, and just be happy with a solid all around second baseman, probably, that we can put all over the diamond, because he's going to play the outfield, he's going to play third base, maybe even get some shortstop eligibility, like a Martin Prado type of player. Maybe that's just what he is. And is that a tier one, though? And that's where I guess that's where the debate was at, right? So Kurt, you had a maybe. David, what was your final answer for that?
Kind of also a maybe, I guess. I mean, he's got the talent to be, so I mean, I understand with ranking him there.
Yeah, no, I'm full in on him as a tier one player. I think he's going to be an all-star player, and he's going to do it all over the diamond. And I don't see any reason to really drop him more than wherever you had him at the beginning of the season. Maybe he didn't do some of the stuff that you hoped for, but man, I don't know why there are people dropping him like 60, 70 spots in rankings, and that's just too much for me. So still a tier one player for me. Royce Lewis, worth talking about as well. The injury, I haven't heard many updates about Royce Lewis. Have you, Kurt, have you heard anything about Royce Lewis moving forward? I'm assuming that he's good to go, but I just don't hear a lot from him.
Yeah, and it's funny, because it's, even when Royce Lewis was healthy, you didn't hear a whole lot of chatter around him. It was more of a, you know, silent but killer when you looked at just what numbers he was putting up. I haven't heard anything coming off of the ACL, but I love him at two. I still believe in Royce Lewis. I know there's people who think this injury should have knocked him down lower, but I think he comes back stronger.
That fall, remember that fall ball league he did in 2019? That's what I'm still holding on to.
I am too.
Yeah. I agree. And there's just nobody else that I think I can even argue or even ask you, David, like, oh, what do you think about this guy ahead of Royce Lewis? I'm assuming that's where he clocks in for you two on this system.
Yeah, yeah, he's up there, and he was able to take some live at bats and play in instructional league games this fall. So he was able to get something, you know, back going and get kind of some at bats, some game experience under his legs this past fall before heading into spring this year. So I mean, I think number two and tier two is a good spot for him right now while he's rehabbing from that ACL, and you know, perhaps he could jump back up into tier one depending on how he performs this season when he comes back. And you know, when he does come back, I mean, he could vault up to the big leagues relatively quickly. I mean, he's also been a prospect for a while, and you know, he's someone that if he's able to hit the ground running and perform well, he could end up grabbing a spot.
Yeah, I think that, you know, 22 years old, lots of time here for him. And it's not like it was a struggle. It was a catastrophic injury that athletes have come back from. A lot of athletes have come back from. Maybe it saps a little bit of his speed, but definitely worth getting if you still can on the cheap. When I opened this Twins list, though, I did half expect Jose Miranda to be way up and just go all in on this guy because his 2021 was incredible. Kurt, was I, you know, maybe I'm a little over anxious on Jose Miranda because he has him all the way down at seven. That's David Funnell, all the way down at seven here for the Twins. And I feel like I would take Miranda ahead of Ryan and Duran and Woods Richardson and Blazevic. And I'd slot him probably in at three, to be honest.
I'm right there with you. I think the four pitchers in front of him are good pitchers. I think they have potential to be solid starters, but Miranda at seven is my kind of O face when I looked at the top 10. I think Miranda deserves to be at number three ahead of Balazovic. You know, you talked about Austin Martin's ability to go around the diamond. I mean, it's pointed out in the article, I apologize, from Dave. And Dave calls out, you know, he played how many games in different positions? 13 at first, 20 at second, 39 at third, and 3 in the outfield. To be able to do that defensively and still put up the great 2021 offensive numbers
is
incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see, mate. I mean, we have seen this before, you know, where guys come out of, he came out of nowhere. I mean, honestly, nothing in his past suggested this. So I understand that aspect of it. David, what do you think? Seven or three? You have to pick.
Oh, now I have to pick between one. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I could be hard on you.
How about right in the middle? No.
No, that's what Kurt, our nice guest, gets the easy questions. You get the tough ones.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, you guys have talked plenty about Miranda, and yeah, his season was phenomenal. And, you know, maybe it's just, I don't know. I mean, you guys don't really like pitchers as much over position players and putting them over. Well, you got four pitchers right in front of them. But I don't know. I mean, Miranda's a really good player, brings, you know, a lot to, you know, the stat sheet, but I don't know. I don't know the Twin system as well as to where to put him.
Right.
And the one thing about Miranda that I think does nudge him down some lists, maybe why Dave has him at seven, I know MLB.com has him at eight, is Josh Donaldson's at third base getting paid $20 million. Kirilloff had a decent rookie year last year. So where does Miranda fit? You know, if the Twins aren't very good, do they maybe trade off Donaldson to a contender and get rid of the cash and Miranda gets a space? But at least for the next couple of years, that utility mindset of Miranda is kind of what he has to be.
Yeah. And Dave mentioned that possible second base. And man, if you can get Miranda at second base, that's intriguing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Cantorino, awesome stuff. Honestly, like, I like him just as much as those pitchers ahead. And David, you know, calling us out on our anti-pitching love, and it is true he's right. But part of it also is like, I don't see ace potential out of those guys, but with Matt Canarino, I could see him exploding to be that ace or number two in a list, whereas these other guys ahead of him, Woods Richardson, Duran, Ryan, we've already like seen, I think, the, you know, what he is at this point. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, so interesting there. But this is a deep system too. We're getting in to tier three here. Aaron Sabato is a hobby love guy as well. I know, Kurt, you'll probably agree with that. Kavako, Urbina down here as well are really interesting fantasy prospects, and they're super young, and they didn't, you know, it's a lot of fatigue in this system. Honestly, this is the theme I'm noticing. You know, Urbina was a thing there for a minute, Kavako was a thing there for a minute, and they just didn't do much, but they were 19, 18 years old. We should be giving these guys a break, in my opinion. What do you guys, Kurt, what do you think? I know you know Kavako well as well from Bowman Draft. What do you have to add about what I just said there?
No, I think you're right. If you look at the middle 13, 14, 15 of Urbina, Kavako, and Chase Petty, you've got people at 19, 20, and 18 right in the middle of his tier three. I think that there's a lot of learning and development in that curve. You talk about a pitcher not being linear. It sometimes depends on what that hitter's working on. You know, Dave talked about that sometimes, probably with Austin Martin and how Groshans, and you mentioned it too, Alex. I think that Urbina and Kavako having kind of an off year, the public is so fast to give them demerits, but then super slow to let them know, gosh, they're 19, 20, and 18. When I was 19, 20 or 18, I couldn't focus on one thing to save my life. These guys are expected to live up to the prospect billing that we give them coming into the system. I think it's unfair. I think it's, they should get a fair shakedown of another year or two to see if what they really are.
David, you're the pitcher guy. I'm going to give you some stats here. 100 innings, 142 strikeouts, 2.1 ERA in high A and low A, is ranked at number 29. Louis Varland. What a phenomenal year for this guy. All the way down at 29. What are your thoughts on that, David?
I mean, those are really good stats for Varland, and he had a solid season. I mean, maybe there's, I don't know if, you know, Dave's looked at him, it's like, okay, he's a 24-year-old in A-ball, you know, maybe being, you know, too old for that level. Maybe that's part of his thinking there. But, I mean, with stats like that, you'd think he'd certainly be higher, and he would be able to be higher in a system like this. I mean, it has some solid prospects in it, but, I mean, I think he could be higher than 29 after putting up numbers like that.
Yeah, it makes me want to go check out some of the guys ahead of him that maybe I haven't heard as much, because
like Blaine Enloe. Is Blaine Enloe still worthy of being, you know, a top 20 prospect in this system?
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll have to have him on. We have to have all these guys on at some point, but let's move on. Let's just go to the Tiger. I'm ready. We've made Kurt wait so long here. And we got to get to the Tigers here, and we are, you know, getting towards, you know, the limit of what I think a reasonable podcast might be. So, Kurt, you're on now. We'll let you do the talking. I'm going to sit back, relax here. You take it over. Tell us about your beloved Detroit Tigers here in their top 50 list.
Well, I will say that you making me be patient this long is par for the course, because Tiger fans have been patient for about 10 years for Al Avila to make some smart moves. And I'll give credit where credit's due. The last probably 18 months to 24 months in the Tigers organization has been smart. For the first time in a while, the major league club overperformed, and they did so with the graduation of a lot of prospects last year. You know, in 2021, my list lost, just to kind of go down the list, Casey Mize, Akil Baddoo, Tarek Skubal, Matt Manning, Daz Cameron, Derek Hill, all graduated out of the top 50. Now, the foundational talent, the generational talent of Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson still lead the list. The difficulty with the Tigers organization now is they start to compete and build a major league roster. We're learning the depth really isn't there in our farm system. You know, we have debatable. I know us at Prospects 1500 had a Twitter poll the other day that I was happy Detroit won. You know, the 1-2 punch of Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson is arguably the best 1-2 punch in all of minor league baseball. Behind that, they're a middle of the road farm system. But that's a good thing because, like David mentioned about the White Sox having a poor system because the Major League Baseball team is competing for World Series or for playoffs and World Series titles. I'm hoping that's what Detroit's farm system ends up looking like in the next 2 years. So they are competing for those playoffs and World Series titles.
Yeah, it's actually a little similar to the Padres where we have those top two guys in Abrams and Hassel who are arguably the best 1-2 punch in the minor. No, I guess it's not. But they're close. Like, they're close enough. And after that, it does, you know, it drops off a little bit. But there's still a lot to like here. Let's start off with, I mean, we could talk about Riley and Spencer all day long. I've been Spencer ahead of Riley Green, and I was ready to argue about that going on here. And I was like, I'll just look at Riley Green's stats really quickly. God, the things he did as a 20-year-old. I think I got to keep Riley Green ahead of Tork, even though I love very, very much Spencer Torkelson. But how close was it?
Oh, it's incredibly close. It's fractions of a point. It's one of those. This is the first time that I have rated Riley Green ahead of Spencer Torkelson. And from a fan standpoint, from a baseball standpoint, from a number standpoint, I believe Spencer Torkelson will have a better impact than Riley Green when it comes to Detroit Tiger baseball. Knowing that Prospects 1500 at the core of our DNA is some dynasty baseball, when Torkelson is now moving from third base to first base and AJ Hinch calls him the first baseman of the future, that puts Torkelson in a different fantasy position. And into a position where first base, when it comes to all-stars and MVPs and, you know, standout talent, Torkelson, his value in a dynasty world shrinks fractionally. And that's kind of why I dropped him to 2 and put Riley ahead. And I'm with you, Alex. The stuff that Riley Green was doing 1 year younger than Spencer is just incredible.
Dave, what do you think? I'm interested. You have Tork or Green at number one here?
I mean, that's just kind of the big debate. I mean, I think real life, you could see, you know, Spencer Torkelson being the number one guy. I mean, he was the number one overall pick. And, you know, he's got the big power, the big hit tool. You know, he's got all that. But, I mean, that's where it comes to the real life versus fantasy debate. And, you know, in the fantasy baseball world, Riley Green does bring a bit more to the table, you know, especially with his speed and being able to get stolen bases. So when it comes to that, having Green up above makes more sense. So it just kind of comes down to what you weigh more heavily. If you weigh the fantasy baseball aspect, I could see you going with Green. If you weigh the just kind of real life baseball prospects aspect, it's Torkelson. So it's just a matter of what you grade more heavily.
And 1 second on Riley Green. Let's take a moment and think of how just amazing that 2019 draft stands to be with Adley Rutschman at 1, Bobby Witt Jr. at 2, Andrew Vaughn at 3, JJ Bleday at 4, Riley Green at 5, and Alex, your boy CJ Abrams at 6. That
one does not belong.
Well, yeah, one may not belong, but that top 6, and then Josh Jung at number 8, you know, working his way up in the Rangers, that has potential to be one of those drafts that we look back at in 15 years and say, wow.
Like that 2005 draft. That one was stacked.
Yep.
Yeah. One question here, and I think this might settle it for our listeners as well. How can Riley Green stick in center defensively?
Defensively, yes. Will he be asked to? I don't think so. Just from a wear and tear on the body, it doesn't take a common baseball fan to look at Comerica and see the wide open center field that we have. I think somebody like a Derek Hill or a Akil Baddoo plays center while Riley Green plays a corner, preferably left field. And that's just to protect him against a freak injury or overexertion that's needed for his bat in the lineup.
Interesting. Yeah, it's still so close. It's crazy. It doesn't really matter, I suppose. And we spent probably too long on it discussing like, oh, who's one and two. But the point is to discuss both of those guys. And I mean, I traded for Torque in a dynasty league and I gave up a ton to have the permission to draft him in a first year player draft. I mean, I still have no regrets whatsoever. And these guys are just going to be fun to follow. All right, let's move on. Tier two, much shorter than a lot of lists, I would imagine. Well, only three players here in tier two. Can you go over kind of what your thinking was on limiting those three? And is it, you know, big drop off for you? Or could you maybe have floated a Ty Madden or I guess there's not a lot, I guess. So maybe you have it right on, I guess.
Yeah, and it's just, it kind of speaks to that depth. Once you get away from those number one and number two guys, yeah, there's a couple tier two guys, but it almost goes into a lower tier two in some other systems that you'll see us rank across the next month. Dylan Dingler, I know you're not high on catchers. I'm still real high on Dingler, especially when he was in double A before Riley and Tort got promoted. Those three together in a lineup, just they wreaked hell on double A pitching. And then Jackson Jobe, you know, he was the highest drafted high schooler in the draft at number three. I get excited about a pitching prospect because I know what AJ Hinch and Chris Fetter, the pitching coach, and their systems will do to Jackson Jobe. I look at Jackson Jobe, 19, coming out of high school, and I see a Casey Mize and I see a Justin Verlander. I see that powerful right-handed pitcher who could be, you know, that key foundational starter for Detroit. And then my number five in tier two is a little bit higher than I think almost everybody else in the prospect world has Roberto Campos. And Roberto Campos in tier two for me is a product of he's 18 years old playing rookie ball, 6'3", 200, but a fast speed, rangeful 6'3", 200. The only thing he needs to show is how can he adapt to American professional baseball in 2021 or 2022. Sorry.
Yeah. David, I know you follow the draft really closely. What did you think of Jackson Jobe there at four for Kurt and then Ty Madden there at six for Kurt on his list? Pretty good.
I mean, I think it was a really strong draft class for them with Jobe and Madden. I mean, getting Madden at where they did with the 32nd pick, I mean, that was a massive steal in my opinion. I don't know how he fell that far, but I'm with Kurt there on Jobe. I think he's going to be a stud. And I think there's a lot to unlock with him and a lot of talent. Ty Madden, I think he's a really, really good pitcher. You know, he's got to be more coming out of college. He's going to be more polished, kind of a bit more of that safer pick. You know, he may not – Madden's not going to have the upside that Jobe has. I mean, Jobe has that the Justin Verlander-type upside that Kurt was talking about. Madden probably doesn't have that much. But I mean, he's going to be a solid rotation guy, you know, maybe a mid rotation arm for him, and he could move up relatively quickly throughout the system.
And to that point, imagine just in a future world 2 years from now where it's Casey Mize, Jackson Jobe, Ty Madden, where you have a picture of Ty Madden's quality as your number three. There's a lot of excitement to be had for Tiger fans when we look at our pitching.
I mean, I've got that in Milwaukee. I mean, in Milwaukee, you've got Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, and you got Freddie Peralta as your number three, you know?
Yep.
Let's not forget that they also got Isaac Pacheco there at number 39 overall in the draft too, who I didn't know much about during the draft, but have seen a lot of hype for in the last couple of months here. So what can you tell me about Pacheco, Kurt?
Amazing athleticism. To me, he's the highest ceiling guy for me to have him ranked at number eight. For me, he's ranked at number eight just because I haven't seen a lot of his game. He played a little bit of rookie ball where he acted like a 19-year-old. You know, he had 43 strikeouts in 30 games. But what he didn't act like a 19-year-old is in 30 games, he was on base 42 times. I believe like 24 hits and 18 walks in 30 games, which, yeah, it's Florida Coast League rookie ball. But for a 19-year-old to get on base, you know, 1.3 times a game, that's encouraging.
What about anybody else here at tier three that sticks out for you? I'll let you have the floor. Anybody you want to mention?
Ryan Creedler. And I owe Ryan Creedler an apology because in 2021, Ryan Creedler was not even ranked in my top 50. 24-year-old playing AAA ball in Toledo. And he had a season where if it wasn't for two guys named Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson, he would have been the Tigers player, the offensive player of the year. Just incredible development this year in Toledo to really just rocket up people's boards. It's one of those, yeah, you could say he was covered by having Torkelson and Green in the lineup, but he still had to take advantage of it. And we signed Javi Baez at the big leagues, you know, big signing for Detroit. Second base could be a position where Creedler moves over and sees some time at the big leagues in 2022.
I got one guy here that I want to bring up and talk about here. And that was one that the Brewers sent to you back in July. And that's Reese Olson.
Yes.
Who comes in at number nine. I mean, he was a guy who, I mean, he wasn't even on my Brewers top 50 last year. And the Brewers system, you know, really hasn't been that strong, and he still wasn't there. And then he had a really strong start to the season. He was catching some eyes, catching some attention. Then he ends up getting traded for Daniel Norris. And he was still, like, even around there, you're still kind of probably going to be around the tier five section for me. But you've got him all the way up here in tier three in the top 10 at number nine. What do you see in Reese Olson, and how has he really kind of grown since going over to Detroit, and why is he up so high?
I have Reese Olson up so high just because he has that combination of high strikeouts, you know, across Milwaukee and Detroit, 114 and 104 innings. But what really stands out for me is really what he doesn't do, and that's he doesn't give up home runs. And for anybody who's watched a lot of Detroit Tiger baseball in 2021, you saw Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal just give up tons of home runs at the major league level. So having someone like Olson in the minor league system be able to have that high strikeouts and limit the power, you know, kind of pitch to a lighter contact is encouraging. It's one of those also the lack of control that he kind of gets dinged for wasn't there at the end of 2021. It seemed that he had fixed some of his command and control issues while still maintaining that strikeout rate.
I was going to say something and I totally forgot what I was going to say about Reese Olson. It was good too, I promise. Never mind. Anyway,
I wish I could read your mind, sir.
No, it was good. Uh-huh. I was like, well, as soon as he's done, I'll just mention it. And then I totally, I think it's probably time to wrap this thing up. This is going to be one of our longest podcasts ever, which is awesome because it's, you know, I'm sure people don't mind them. You know, if we cover more teams, you know, we usually do two on these. We try to hit all five. So, Kurt, anybody beyond that, that we want to try to take a look at, perhaps in your tier four or tier five range, really quickly, you know, sentence or two each about, a few guys down here.
One guy is Bo Brisky, number 18 on my rankings. First guy in tier four, Detroit Tigers minor league pitcher of the year last year, really showed great development in Erie. I'm excited to see what he can do in AAA next year. He's a name to watch, and he's available in a lot of dynasty leagues. So it's one of those, if he's still out there, grab him. If not, he could probably be had for, minimal return just because he's not, you know, a national name per se. The other one is, Austin Murr, outfielder, 22, 2021 draft from this past year's draft coming out of NC State. I think he has the ability to really fly up some organizational farm systems with his bat.
I did remember what I was going to say about it's out of context now, but sometimes when you get a new player from an organization, it's that shiny new toy. And we had a guy like that in the Padres where I was like, oh, hey, I remember. You look pretty good. And then of course, you know, you want the team to win that trade. So it's like, oh yeah, we stole this guy from the Brewers. Let's make David feel bad.
It didn't take much to win that trade given the way Daniel Norris pitched.
Daniel Norris. This is true.
He said that name and I laughed. I'm not going to lie. That
was pretty funny. I was shocked that we got Olson in return for him too. When it happened.
I was shocked they gave up Olson for Daniel Norris. I'm like, really? Like I think they gave up more for Daniel Norris than they gave up for Eduardo Escobar.
Possibly.
They gave up Cooper Hummel and Alberto Ciprian, who was in like the DSL, like wasn't even one of our main guys in the DSL. And like they gave up those guys for Eduardo Escobar. And they gave up Reese Olson, who was having a phenomenal season, for Norris. And it's just like, why?
Well, no take backs.
Yeah, no, it's too late for that.
That's going to be your preview for next week when we do go over the Brewers. And the rest of the NL Central. So David, that'll be your moment to shine. That'll be next week. We'll try to get the rest of the NL Central, some of your other favorite teams, I know, David. So I'm sure you'll have nothing but nice things to say about all those Cardinals prospects and Reds prospects.
Yes.
But I think that is where we will wrap it up again. So I think we did it. I think this is the longest podcast we've ever done. But hey, we hit five farm systems. And I know in the past, you know, we would get some guests on and we go really in depth and that's fantastic. I love those. But then we would skip over some teams. And I think this way we get something from every team. There's something here for everybody listening. And that's my goal, is to try to get to every single team at some point. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast and hearing about some of those players on the teams in the AL Central. Kurt, I want to thank you for coming on and staying with us for so long. I got to pay you some overtime, but anything you want to add here, again, maybe your Twitter handle or anything else that you're working on that people need to know about?
You bet. One, pay me in sour beer. Two, you can find me in all my Detroit sports references and hobby connections on Twitter. It's DET_guru_Kurt. And in February, I've got a pitchers and catchers of the Tigers organization. Just to highlight, hopefully we get baseball and the pitchers and catchers report as timed. But with pitchers and catchers reporting, I'm going to have an article on prospect pitchers, and I'm going to say it with a smile, and then catchers, because Alex, I know you love catchers.
My two favorite positions, yeah. Hey, you got to get pitchers. You got to get them. I just don't want to lose out on my draft picks when I pick a pitcher. But anyway, that's for another day. David, thanks for sticking around with us too this whole time. Hope you guys enjoyed. Again, check out these top 50 lists that are coming out daily. They're awesome. So much information there to keep you over until baseball comes back, which who knows when that's coming back. But hopefully you can get some information, get up on those Dynasty League mates of yours that are taking this offseason off, which is a mistake. But anyway, this is Futures Focus Podcast. Alex Sanchez with you, David Gasper, Kurt Moody. We will talk to you soon. See you next week.